So welcome everyone. Before we begin our talk tonight, we'll begin by if anyone has any questions about the practice of meditation, the practice of mindfulness. As importantly, or most importantly, or equally as importantly, whether we bring the liberating practices of the Buddha Dharma into our daily life. So if anything that's not clear, if we have some questions about, please feel free to ask the question. I don't know much about it, but I do know this, that when they, actually, the master said, it's a pretty Buddhist symbol in Vedic Hindu culture. And actually, the Nazi philosophy, maybe at the end, we can, okay? What are we doing? We're talking at the end, maybe you could say something. But it actually, so the Nazis took it from the, and they actually, it goes a different way and has a very different meaning. If you look at the, But it is a symbol that you see in Hinduism and you'll also see it in Buddhism. And because of our experience with the Nazis, it's a good conversation. People kind of go, it's understandable. It's good to understand that the subject of the Nazis took from an ancient culture and used it for their own purposes. Any other questions about practice? Practice. What would you like me to say? Just for those who aren't familiar with Buddhist terminology, what Andy's referring to that in traditional Buddhism, there are what are called three refuges of three jewels that usually are the where someone who's following the Buddhist path, following the Buddha teaching, goes to refuge, puts one trust in. And that traditionally is Buddha Dharma Sangha. And it has lots of different meanings, but we could say simply as refuge, put my trust in the Buddha. Both means the Buddha as teacher, as historical teacher, but also our Buddha nature. Because the Buddha is simply some human being who is awakened the Buddha nature, the Buddha religion. They've awakened to the inherent, all the positive potentials and qualities of the mind. To take refuge in the Dharma is to take refuge in the whole body of teaching and practices that is transmitted taught by the Buddha, but also the force and creatively experimented with for thousands of years in the tradition of the Dharma. And then there is the Sangha. Sangha, which is oftentimes just meant to be the people who practice the Buddha Dharma. There are, within the Buddhist Sangha, the Buddhist community, it is considered a fourfold community. Two of the folds are amongst the nuns, those followers of the Buddha going back to the Buddhist time, who leave home. And this really goes back to the time of the Buddha, when he was an itinerant teacher throughout the south, northern India. And as he went from village to village teaching, many people were deeply moved by his teaching, by his presence, and wanted to go with him. So they left their families, or they left their household of responsibility, and became a follower of his, but within the context of a community that practiced having a possession, two basic possessions. They didn't have all the things that householders had. They didn't have homes. They also were celibate. They didn't have family. They didn't have relationships. And they had a life that was totally dedicated to dedicated practice, to be an example of the Buddha's teaching, and to be a teacher, to share with that time. But the other two souls were the great men and women, like ourselves. So traditionally, it was just seen that the Sangha are those that practice the Buddha Dharma, for example. But then we picked up when we went to Deer Park, which is a Thich Nhat Hanh community out in Southern California, in San Diego. When Thich Nhat Hanh talks about the practice of Sangha, it's going beyond just taking refuge in the Buddha Dharma. He really sees it as a more practice of life. You could say everybody practices on one level a practice of non-self. So in that verse, the language before the Dharma talk, it was mentioned, let us rid ourselves or free ourselves from separation, free ourselves from our attachment to the delusive self, so we can go up with it. You would say, when all the water particles are going like a river, they're in harmony with one another. Many properties are coming together to form a river, and in that harmony, the river is able to carry you along. A few drops cannot carry us along. A little bit of dripping water cannot carry us along. A tiny little stream, 2 inches deep, cannot carry us along. But a deep river, you can just float along, grasp along, float along, it can carry us along. So, in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, Sangha or community. And one of the things that one can do in a community is one can care for the well-being of others. As much as one tradition cares for oneself. Now that in and of itself is a good thing. Because most of us lost in our own narcissism, our life just focuses around ourselves. Our needs, our wants, our desires, our health, our well-being. It's very narrowly constricted. But when one lives in a sequence of a kind of community, one cares about the other bodies and the well-being of the other bodies. practically. As well as, like you talked about the river, there is a power connecting the other that has the power to carry us along. Many of us, you know, when we doubt ourselves, it is often because we are lost in our own personal view of who we are. We may have a view that considers us inadequate or not up to, or that we say it's too difficult or whatever kind of choice or affirmation. But when one knows one is not wrong, when one knows that one is moving along with another, so that one has the support as well as the inspiration of others. Once in a while, in the flow of it. Do you know what I'm saying? It's sort of like when you put your boat in the river, and if it's a good river, you don't have to do much, do you? I mean, you've got to do maybe a little paddling or a little steering, but the prime energy, the primal energy, the main necessity along is what? So to place my trust in the community of practitioners is to really give one a heads up and trust in this. So the practice of community is the practice of myself, is the practice of loving kindness, is the practice of patience. It's really, I mean, all the qualities that we think we are cultivating. Selflessness, compassion, patience, energetic application, joy. These are all things that we can sustain in a community that practices all that. So because when many people are trying to think together, you know, if I forget, you remind me. And you don't remind me always by tapping me on my shoulder and then sending me a reminder, like an email reminder. It's because, let's say my practice is not going well, but I see you. I see you, I see you, I see you, I see you. You know, it's sort of like we used to talk about Sunday, the meetings, the blessed meetings that we have here. And, sometimes people would come or not come, based on how they were feeling or whether they felt they needed to come. And that's fine. But I would say that's in the beginning of the consciousness. We are first time or we come to Jesus. In the beginning we come to ourselves. But after time we come to each other. And I show up for you. You show up for me. It's a very different way of originally than the way we're using it, which is all about me. Do I need it? And if I don't need it, then I won't come anymore. I don't need to come. Whatever that is. But that's always where we're outside kind of looking in and checking and evaluating and making these various kind of decisions as opposed to just in the river. And here for the river, we just flow along. Right? And enjoy flowing with us. We love them being. Because even in the Buddhist, even in the Buddhist community, of monks and nuns, Andy was struck by how close it was, which is surprising. They're monks and nuns. They should be kind of very independent and very solitary. And he said, these are people family users, relationships in their life. And so when they have left their biological family, as monks and nuns have to do, they very much want to recreate within the monastic community, family. So they call each other what? Brothers and sisters. They call each other what? The family. The people, you know, family. People on the same generation, they are brothers and sisters. In the same way, in the Buddhist community, we are brothers and sisters. And it connotes what we see, that we have that kind of relationship. You know, in the traditional ceremony of taking refuge, the Buddhist ceremony of taking refuge, traditionally, after one receives refuge and receives the precepts of training, one receives a Buddhist name, a Dharma name. And that goes back to the Buddha. And again, it is because the senses, in the same way when one came into a physical life, one receives one's family. And that delineates who one is in terms of one's biological family in the world. In the same way, when we truly enter a spiritual family, and enter a spiritual family, we receive a new name, which has meaning in terms of our churches. In the same way, our family name has lots of meanings when we go, quote unquote, worthy of us. So again, and some people are surprised. Because again, most of us here in America who are practicing Buddhism, we're not born Buddhists, converts, if that's a better word. And most of us have come to Buddhism as individuals. In our interest in learning meditation, learning monasticism, and in perhaps developing the capacity but most of us come because of individual concern. So we don't come often with a sense of looking for community. We're sort of on a personal spiritual path, and it's nice to see there are other people sitting around next to us probably doing the same thing, but we kind of come and go. But it's not harm. And again, having for instance in various spiritual traditions, there are certain types of Buddhist communities and really bad influence. If people kind of come and meditate together. And there are communities where people might be meditating next to one another on a cushion for years and never really have a personal talk with the person, that's no idea about it. It's kind of amazing to me. I guess a number of years ago, we invited to do a weekend retreat for a group up in northern Florida. And at some point, I was kind of involving them in a discussion. It was a sound retreat, but I think it was toward the end or something. So I was kind of asking them about their lives and their practices, and I could tell that I was in kind of strange territory, that people were having trouble talking. So I could tell there was resistance to it. And I thought this was strange because I knew that many of the people had been practicing together for a number of years. And it turned out it was just that. I mean, they practiced together a number of years, they sat together on a weekly basis, and they preached together, but they never talked. About who they were, their lives. They never even talked to each other about their meditation practice and their experience. So again, in our tradition, so in the Florida Community Mindfulness, we call ourselves what? We choose a name that we call ourselves, the Florida Community Mindfulness. We call ourselves the Florida Meditators, the Florida Mindfulness Meditators. So, you know, some sort. But we chose community because we understand that we want to create a community to support one another. In the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, one of the verses says, I think Ricky's been the stronger the tune that lives in harmony and awareness. So, when I transmit the message, the people I do say, I kind of modify it. And the community that is the way it's best to live in harmony with it. Because we are a work in progress, and that is our practice. How can we come together? Different human beings, different ideas, different names, that get our share of this experience, and learn to live in harmony with it. I think that is, to me, spiritual communities, and here I'm going beyond Buddhist community, but any type of spiritual community, Buddhist community, of any type, I think the process, let me ask you a question. It was kind of like one of these divisive issues. I guess there's been controversy within the community around, not necessarily some sort of social issue or something. But I know that caused division. I responded to that and said, you have to find a way to come to a harmonious resolution. Because if people, I'm addressing the military, I think if people who basically are sharing the same values more cannot live in harmony with them, what chance is to do it? If we can't learn, let's say we of the Buddha Dharma, we who have all the teachings and the practices, that clearly teach us and show us how to live together, and how to let go of those devices, and how to be compassionate, etc. If we can't manifest that in our own community, then how can we, when we look at the world and accept them to be? So the practice of community is really important, because it means that we see our little community, or the little community, see the self, in the human community. And if we can get sort of, if we can get our act together, and if we can learn in our personal lives, but most importantly, in our interpersonal lives, how to live in peace, respect, how we can put aside differences and personal beliefs and sense of ideas, etc. And learn to see the human. In other words, to really see we are brothers and sisters. That understanding and respecting that is more important than the ideas that are things like. They would believe us, but they're not real. I came across an old box I'm packing in my home, and it was an old box of things from Chicago, some 30, 40 years ago, and I came across a book of poetry from the side of Vietnam, a book of poetry that he lived in during the Vietnam War. And these beautiful lines here. People are thinking they're killing an idea when they're shooting their brothers. They're killing their brothers when they think they're shooting in the enemy because of an idea. Because I'm a this and you're that. I'm a right wing and you're a left wing. I'm a red state and you're a blue state. I'm a real American and you're not. All these ideas, these beliefs. And then you believe they're real. And you don't see that we're brothers and sisters. We're all human beings. We're all the same. Same eyes, same ears, same eyes, same eyes. same as the Dalai Lama always says, you know, everybody wants to be happy, nobody wants to suffer. For human beings. So when we understand that and work together to alleviate the suffering, we feel an answer happy. Kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? And yet, because of the movement, because of ignorance, we don't see the obvious. And so we cannot live as we did not live. We couldn't. And so we hold it in the mind. Hopefully, because it's an active signature right now. In many ways. And we do that for everyone society globally and socially. We do that with each other. We do that in our family. We do that in our relationships. Before I come back to the studio, I want to read a little poem. I'm reading from the book Happiness, and I think most of you receive emails from us. If you want to receive emails, just go to aspiretomindfulness.org and get my email list. But you've probably been inundated with a couple of about an upcoming intensive that we're doing, probably 40 or 50 practices in the Zen-Buddhist tradition. I would just really recommend this. I mean, you probably have close to really 50 people. Really 50. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of people who are going to be very involved in this. But certainly, for those of you who aren't, for whatever reason, in it, I certainly recommend this book. It's really a compilation of very wonderful, very accessible games and practices. And if anybody wants to be a good life, if anybody wants to be happier in their life and happy in their relationships, so this is certainly a very practical and a simple process. So you listen out of the intensive, that's what I'm telling you, to take a look at this book and practice it. Anyhow, right at the end of the poem I wanted to share with you. It's called Our True Heritage. It's written by Thich Nhat Hanh. It goes, the cosmos is filled with precious gems. I want to offer a handful of them to you this morning. Each moment you are alone with a gem, shining through and containing earth and stars, water and clouds. It needs you to be gem, for the miracles to be displayed. Suddenly, you hear the birds sing. The fine sand. See the flowers blooming, the blue sky, the white clouds, the smile and the marvelous look of your beloved. You, the richest person on earth, who have been going around begging for a living. Stop feeling your destitute. Come back and claim your heritage. We should enjoy our happiness and offer it to others. Cherish this very moment. Let go of the screaming of distress and embrace life fully from God. Again, this is if you don't want to make meditation and mindfulness into a practice that you do, mindfulness and meditation is an avenue that opens us up to life. It's about life. become a Christian, and what he learned to be a Christian is a means to be in the direction of your life. Again, you know, when we are, as he says, what's a justification? A justification for our business. What's a justification? Of course, there's nothing. Needed, wanted. But the market is that it's also the way that the people are in our lives. We don't see ourselves in place. We see ourselves as a leader. We always grasping the thing. Stop being the best to keep charge. Stop heading for a living. It's wrong for something. You, the richest person on earth. So you might say, I just got laid off. My house is in foreclosure. I don't feel like the richest person. But in the earlier part of the poem, you elucidated on this. What am I? Here we are. And whether we put the money in the Ghana or put it in, this is all service. And food, and convenience. What more do we need for that? Sorry for that, but I am. Because we need to pray gently for the miracles of the Spirit. Do you think? Yeah.